This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you been struggling lately? Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, difficulty with a relationship, or just suffering from low self-esteem. If so, then BetterHelp wants to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You get to talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network, and they give you access to help that may not be available in your area. You just need to fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And there's a special offer to Nowhere to Be Found listeners. You'll get 10% off of your first month, but only if you go through the link or type in betterhelp.com/NTBF for Nowhere to Be Found. That's better, HELP.com/NTBF. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And you can find the link in our show notes and on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com. Previously on Nowhere to Be Found.
At these quote-unquote renegades, you have to pay like anywhere between $50 and $150 a head to go.
In our party that said the noise would be okay, she walked into their camper in the hours of the morning.
It's called puddling people. One of her friends went camping with them, and they did that to him. And from her words was that he got puddled, like got super high, and thought that they were trying to kill him. And then they left him out in the middle of the forest.
I'm your host, Amanda Papineau, and this is Nowhere to Be Found. This case is pretty difficult to follow, and if you're anything like me, then your head is probably spinning with all the different storylines and key players. I had this upcoming interview about a month ago. It was actually just one day after the Donovan interview, but I decided to play Anna, Krista, and Warren first. I think it was good for us to hear a few different perspectives of the event. Tonight, we're going to start with my interview with private investigator Mark Perkins, who's been on the case since day one. Hearing just a few of the stories we have, it's easy to see how complicated this can get. Now imagine you're Mark, and you've interviewed everyone we have heard, and dozens more, and documented everything. I have a lot of respect for him and what he does, and I think now is the perfect time to hear from the Perkins.
Yeah, my name is Mark Perkins. I'm a licensed private investigator in California, have been for the past 25 years. I got involved in the Michael Bryson matter because my daughter is one of Michael Bryson's best friends. And a couple weeks after he went missing, I just couldn't take it sitting in Northern California, not doing anything. So the family asked me to get involved, and I have been involved ever since.
Awesome. So I guess starting back when you first got on this case, like, what was your plan of attack here? Did you start with the people who were there and just kind of go to as many people as would talk to you, or how did you?
Yeah, initially I did quite a bit of the work from my office in Northern California, just getting names of people who people suspected and doing some background investigations on them to get a feel for who they were and, you know, what their situation is, whether they had criminal backgrounds and that type of thing. And then once I had some good solid leads of people to talk to, I made a trip up to Eugene and spent about 5 days up there the first time. And interviewed a whole bunch of people, a lot of the people that were there and people that had suspicions of people that were there, and just got in front of a lot of people and gathered as much information as I could.
Did you feel like you had a hard time getting a hold of people or getting people to talk to you, or pretty easy to get those interviews?
Yeah, pretty easy. I mean, there are still people today that I've never been able to contact. But I don't really have the feeling that they're that significant. Okay. If I did, I wouldn't let that go. I'd track them down, which I had to do to a few people, but mostly people were very, very cooperative with me.
Well, that's good. Kind of surprising to me just from, you know, what we've been hearing, people are kind of closing up and clamming up. So I'm glad you got to them earlier before that all.
Well, the thing is, and what always kind of bothered me about the whole thing is that the original versions of what happened were pretty consistent among the core group of people. Mm-hmm. And whenever that happens, it kind of raises red flags with me, like it's almost rehearsed, you know, because I didn't actually start interviewing them until weeks after Michael went missing.
Plenty of time to get that solid.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and one of the other things that was kind of disturbing is when he initially went missing, law enforcement didn't get up there, first of all, because they weren't even notified for 16 hours. Mm-hmm. But the first people that had showed up, from what I understand, were search and rescue, and law enforcement didn't actually show up until sometime later. And then when they interviewed people, and this is, again, secondhand, I mm-hmm. don't have firsthand knowledge.
Sure.
But when they interviewed people, they were like, it was like in a group setting. And so that's, okay. You know, that just like breaks the,
gosh.
one of the yeah, major that's... rules of law enforcement. So anyway, yeah.
How did search and rescue get there before law enforcement? Like, how would that even come to be?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I've never heard of somebody calling specifically search and rescue.
They called in missing person.
Okay.
But I guess the first people to arrive, cause I don't, have you been up there?
No, I haven't. I'm going to be very soon though.
Yeah, although it's not that many miles outside of Cottage Grove, mm-hmm. it takes a long time to get there because it's just, you know, very windy and it's not the easiest place to get to. Interestingly enough, my wife and I were driving up to Eugene, to visit my daughter, mm-hmm. On Thursday. And that's when on Wednesday. And that's when we first found out that Michael was missing. So we ended up going up to, Hobo Campground, taking my daughter up there. On Thursday morning. So I was actually able to talk, and I wasn't really involved because I was of the opinion that Michael just wandered off and he's going to show back up again.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so I was able to talk to a few people that were up there that apparently had firsthand knowledge of what was going on even before I got involved.
Okay. I just kind of made that connection. Is your daughter Natalie?
Yes.
Okay. I put a message out to her, you know, I kind of put a message out there to everybody that I asked Tina and Parrish, like, who should I talk to? Who do you guys want to see talk about Michael? And who do you think would be a good, where would be a good place for me to start? So they kind of threw some names, and her name was on there as well. So, and I told everybody, you know, no pressure. It's only like if you have something to say or you want to be a part of this, but everybody is going through something unimaginable. So no pressure at all. Not trying to add any stress to any of the friends or family for sure.
Yeah. She's definitely under pressure.
I cannot imagine.
It's driving my wife and me insane. You know, it's just,
I can't imagine.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I talked to Donovan Jones last night. And, he gave me just a general idea of how things were set up there, you know, where the buses were parked, how the tents were set up and stuff. So quite the little setup they had going here with the generator and the,
you know, I mean, because the twins, that's what they do. They organize, music events. And so that's when they got involved. That's when the stage came and the dome came and the buses and the beanbags and all that stuff. They brought all that stuff up and they kind of set the thing up from what they tell me. There was hydration stations up there and all, you know, it sounded like they were trying to make it like a normal festival kind of scene.
Yeah. This definitely sounds like it's not their first rodeo.
Yeah. No, not at all. Yeah. I think it's what they do for a living.
Parrish was kind of under the impression that maybe they were charging people to get into this, that the twins business, you know, it's kind of to contribute to this whole setup that they have. And then Donovan,
like a donation kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then Donovan says, no, there's no cover. There's no security. There's no muscle men, because Parrish has used that term with me a couple times, right. The muscle there. And so when I questioned Donovan on it and just said, like, so what's the, how structured are we talking here? Like checkpoint, you know, pay
no,
to get
not,
in?
Not
He's
at
like,
all.
No, yeah, no, no, no,
not,
no.
Not at all. Yeah, I actually work. I have a buddy that has a security company that provides security for festivals. Mm-hmm. And I've worked a whole bunch of festivals over the years. And this was nothing like that.
Okay.
This was kind of, it was a free for all.
So you're not under the impression that people were paying the twins to get in at all either.
I just heard rumors of donations. That's what I've heard.
That makes more sense, because if you are going to be charging people, there's no way you couldn't have somebody enforcing it.
Yeah. They did not have that.
Right. Okay. A family that was camping near them that wasn't a part of this group in an RV. They were like almost sharing this campsite, it sounds like. A mom, a dad, a child, and two dogs.
Right.
Have you heard of them?
Yeah, actually one of the times I went up to Hobo Camp, mm-hmm. after Parrish and Tina had left, they took over that camp because it's a free campground.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people are semi-homeless, homeless.
And so anything, did they have anything interesting to say or any?
Well, I mean, they just talked about how wild the party was and, you know, and they apparently they had a little confrontation, you know, one time because something happened and, you know, late at night. Because from what I understand, the party pretty much went nonstop for 3 days.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so they really had nothing to contribute to why Michael is missing.
Hmm. Did they mention whether they ever heard anybody, you know, kind of in the night yelling his name or looking around with flashlights at all?
Yeah. See, that's the big question. You know, there's definitely a couple different versions of that.
Agreed.
You know, some people aren't aware of it at all. And other people are like, oh yeah, you know, so that's one of the problems with the whole thing, you know, is just some things just don't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, just kind of the timing of things and then people going back into town. I don't know. There was something about that part of the timeline that just seemed unclear to me. So I was curious if...
The timeline, and it's no clearer to me than the first day that I started.
Really?
I mean, you know, there are people claiming that they're the last to see Michael and they immediately, you know, jumped on it and rousting people in tents,
mm-hmm.
and going up and down the road in a car and all that kind of stuff at a certain time in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just 4:30, it seems like 4:30 kind of is like the target time.
Right.
But then you talk to other people that had no clue that, you know, that ever happened. And so it's just, you know, I think that's one of Parrish and Tina's biggest pet peeve about this whole thing is that they just truly believe that there's something out there that people aren't saying and that they're covering up. And, you know, there's nothing that I've been able to come up with to do a major contradiction. I've passed a few things on to the detective that's working on the case,
mm-hmm.
Because it's something that he needs to follow up with, and there's, you know, not a whole lot I can do about it.
Right.
But yeah, so the ball's kind of in his court on a few things that I've found out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing, you know, with the family and kind of with me, is that you just totally, how does a guy get off a bus And allegedly they start looking for him within minutes after he leaves and he disappears off the face of the earth. You know, that's just, and that always bothers me. And I've talked at length with the twins and, you know, they come across as very believable. You know, I've heard a lot of other rumors about them, but it really, mm-hmm. it's just one of those things all I can hope for at this point is that if there is someone involved in that group, that their conscience gets to them and they come forward,
right.
You know, at some point.
Right.
But there's also the possibility that Michael wandered off and ran into the wrong people.
Yeah. And that would be.
I have talked to a few people that were up there at the time that are well capable of doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well capable.
That's scary.
Yeah, I just met with a guy. I was up there on Tuesday evening, and I met with the guy that I've been looking for a while. And I got in front of him face to face, and As a private investigator, I started out in the business in Los Angeles, and I've worked in areas such as Compton, Watts, East LA, San Fernando Valley. I've worked in Oakland, Richmond, East Palo Alto. He is like top of my list of the most evil people I've ever talked to.
Something else that came up that Donovan noted was that the night before Michael went missing, he mentioned to Donovan that his wallet went missing with $600 in it from the bus. Do you know about that, or
I've heard that he went up with I believe it was $600 because he owed one of the people that were at the party money. And that was, I guess, one of the reasons he wanted to go up there to give the money to the person. And then also he was going to DJ either one or two of the nights. And so that's really the reason that Michael went up there. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, that he did pay one individual, I think it was $400. And he probably had about $200 on him at the time. And I still hear conflicting stories whether he had his wallet or didn't have it. I really don't know. What I understand about Michael is, and this comes from my daughter, that she a lot of times carried all of his stuff because he was notorious for losing things.
I guess just in a general sense, if you had to guess, I know you don't know, what do you think happened?
All I can talk about is what possibly could have happened. And there were, several scenarios, and I have absolutely no evidence to support any of them.
Right. I understand.
The thing about it is, although they say a time frame of when Michael went missing, there's nobody to confirm that or to say that's when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the best I can find is that the DJs that were on stage at the time claimed that Michael was up with them about 2 o'clock in the morning. And then after that, there's really nobody except for the two people that were in the bus that claimed they were the last to see him, that claimed that he left around 4:30. So there's a big window of time when anything could have happened.
Okay.
And people are coming and going, and if Michael did walk off the bus under his own power and went either up or down the hill, I guess any number of things could have happened. He could have been, hit by a car and somebody freaked out, took the body away. Mm-hmm. He could have wandered up into the forest. And when you go up though, you'll see how extreme the environment is.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically straight up in every direction you go. And so the road is the path of least resistance.
Yeah. Especially wearing the shoes he was in, the situation that he was in. It just.
Right. Right. But I mean, obviously he could have, laid down and fell asleep and overdosed, mm-hmm. and never woke up, and mm-hmm. they just haven't found the body yet. He could have been hit by a car. He could have run into the wrong people. I mean, all those things are viable possibilities. And there's also the possibility that he did just leave and he doesn't want to be found. There is that. I mean, it gets dimmer every day. If you ask me, that's one of the scenarios.
But agreed.
There's just too many things, and we have zero answers to help to lead us in any direction to any of the scenarios.
Which to me just screams. I mean, of course, it's speculation. It just screams foul play, cover up.
It does. It absolutely does.
Because an accident. I just feel like there should be a trace.
Right.
Because if you just had no idea that it was going to happen and you, boom, got hit by a car, I don't know. It seems like the only way for it all to just disappear this well is to have someone else involved.
Right. And that's why even when we were being interviewed with Rick Dancer and he brought it up, is it possible that somebody knows what happened? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, absolutely. But then obviously there's other, it's possible that he doesn't want to be found, or he wandered off and we just haven't found the body. It's all kind of equal at this point,
right.
Because it's all possible. I've met Michael a few times. He's been at our house when my daughter and a group of them are all going to a festival someplace. And, with my daughter, he's like, he would never do that.
So Natalie thinks,
that's just not Michael.
And that was kind of what I wanted to get from the friends too, is like, just confirm to me that you don't think that that's what happened. Like, you don't think he just walked away. Cause that's, Parrish and Tina are 100% certain, but then I have that thought in the back of my mind, like, you don't tell your parents everything all the time.
Right.
What does, you know, his best friend, his roommate, his ex-girlfriend, like, what do these people think? And if they all say the exact same thing, then I'm like,
they do. They all say the same thing. Even when talking with his roommate, apparently Michael had a trip planned the next week.
Right.
I'm not sure who he was going with. There was a road trip.
Like return a dog or something. Yeah, I saw that.
He was apparently so looking forward to that, you know, and it just.
Yeah, you don't do that.
It doesn't make any sense.
And even.
You know, and for him, all of a sudden, it's to say, nobody wants me here. You know, where did that come from?
Right. What was the conversation right before that?
Right.
And nobody's able to tell you that. Is that right?
Well, except the two girls that were with him at the time,
okay.
Supposedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really do feel for them because I think that a vast majority of them are probably 100% innocent.
Right.
It seems like that would be that must be the case. I mean, unless this is some huge conspiracy where there's 40 people in on it, which I highly doubt.
It's impossible.
That's impossible. That's too many people to. Yeah. Nobody can keep a secret. So.
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody. Exactly.
So, awesome. All right. I think that is pretty much everything I had. I just wanted to run it by you and see what you thought. So, I really appreciate you talking to me.
No problem. Anything I can do to keep Michael's name out there, I will absolutely be involved in.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And if you come across anybody and, you know, it comes up that they're willing to talk, if, you know, feel free to shoot them my information and vice versa.
Yeah, if you want to reach out to Natalie, just let her know that you talked to me, and then, you know, it's obviously up to her.
Yeah,
whether
yeah.
she wants to get involved or not. But I would say there's probably very few people that know Michael better than Natalie.
And that's what Tina told me, too. So, yeah, I messaged her on Facebook. You know, I was just not, I'm not going to harass her. I put it out there, and if she wants to, I'd love to talk to her.
Okay. I'll mention it to her also.
That'd be great. Awesome.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck. I really hope that something comes forward here.
Why don't we all?
Yeah. All right. Good to talk to you, Mark.
Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Back in episode 4, we heard a story from Anna about puddling. And Anna said that it was a friend of a friend who had told her in a Facebook message that somebody had gotten puddled and left in the woods, basically to fend for themselves. Recently, I was contacted by Jesse, and Jesse was actually there at that event and would like to set the story straight on some of the things that were said. And I'd like to encourage anybody else who hears anything that they know to be untrue, especially firsthand accounts, to please come forward. Either you can email me at nowheretobefound2020@gmail.com, or feel free to reach out to the Nowhere to Be Found Facebook and let me know that you'd like to talk to me about something that was said on the podcast. I don't want to spread misinformation, but since I wasn't there for any of these events, the best I can do is create a platform for people to come forward and give their accounts. Now, if something can be misproven by another's account, or several other accounts, let's say, I'm all ears. So that being said, here's what Jesse had to say about that night. Many of the Renegade attendees went on an overnight hot springs trip in March earlier this year. In the last episode of Nowhere to Be Found, Anna mentioned someone got spun out and left in the woods during this trip because they were new to the group and didn't pass a, quote, vibe check. This is not what happened. However, it was definitely still eventful. Eventful enough for me to warn Michael about before he went to the birthday party, and for me to not want to go with him like I was supposed to. The person who was supposedly dosed at the hot spring trip wanted people on here to know that he willingly got puddled and later even asked for more. He got too high and ran off into the woods when we first got there. And Kyle River was the only one who noticed and ran back to take care of him and bring him back. Donovan later got dosed with acid on accident. No one could remember or figure out how, and had a really bad trip. I was scared for him. And when the sun rose and the group of 15-ish walked back to the cars, we lost 3 people on the trail on the way back, including Hunter and one of the other birthday party goers. The first car left before we realized part of the group hadn't come out yet, so we didn't even know 3 people were missing, because it's literally the easiest trail back to the parking lot.
Kyle River, again, is the one who took it upon himself to take our friend's car, who was missing, and drive back to service to call the first car that had left to get us to come back to search. He was freaking out, like really worried. The girl driving the car wouldn't turn back because she had a doctor's appointment, and she said if we didn't hear from them by the time we got to Eugene, we would send help. I just want to offer my perspective as someone that knows this friend group and dynamic. I know many people are confused as to why people went to town to pick up Kyle for help instead of the family or the cops. But honestly, to those people, Kyle's a skilled outdoorsman and a firefighter who seems to always know what to do in these situations. It was an absolutely horrific decision to not get help immediately, but I want people to understand this is not out of character. Especially considering that they were inebriated, people I bet were thinking Michael would turn up in 5 minutes and be pissed as hell if we got his parents involved. Jesse is able to offer another example of how this group of friends has hesitated to call the authorities in the past, even in an emergency. On Michael's birthday, where I met Hunter, one of Michael's best friends had a seizure on my lap, and we all thought he was going to die. And it took us a solid 10 minutes to decide whether or not to call an ambulance. So stupid. He turned out fine and ended up getting mad we called the ambulance. But I was extremely traumatized from that and remember trying to talk to Hunter about it because we were really connecting at the time. He just kept saying it didn't bother him he almost watched someone die. He kept saying he's seen worse and worked emergency rescue jobs and nothing really got to him emotionally like that anymore. Which is kind of how he's been since Michael's been gone. So nonchalant. And I think that's just how he is.
My name is Natalie Perkins, and Michael is my dearest and closest friend. The very first night I met Michael was a pretty brief encounter back in January of 2018 when my good friend Brittany introduced us on the dance floor at a show the three of us were celebrating our birthdays at. Michael and I also had other mutual friends, so it was a pretty natural flow over the next few months. We frequently started spending more time together and really started to bond. That spring, we went to a music festival together, and we just had so much fun, just the two of us one morning. And that's pretty much when we started to become almost inseparable. Michael and I just had a beautiful instant connection that really only continued to flourish over time.
Okay, so in your experience, like, how would you describe Michael, like, in his personality?
So, Michael... to me, I would just describe him as the most sweet, loving soul I've ever had the chance of knowing. His spirit is silly and playful. You could ask anyone who knew him, and they would tell you he's the life and joy of any gathering. He's giving and generous. He's the kind of person who would gladly take his shirt off of his back for someone else. You know, he could make anyone feel welcome and loved. I would describe him as being so strong through all of his hardships. He still managed to strive forward every day and was always aiming to better himself. And I like always admired him for that.
Yeah.
There's so many wonderful qualities and characteristics I could use to describe him. But really importantly, I want to add that he was the most loyal and trustworthy person I've ever known. He was the one person I trusted with my entire being. I could always count on him for love, support, all the smiles. Even on his bad days, Michael always knew how to bring, like, me and so many others so much joy, and I will forever be thankful for that.
Oh, man, I love hearing that. Like,
yeah. He's an amazing person, and I miss him so much.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Okay, so how long were you guys together?
Romantically, Michael and I were together for just shy of a year. Like I had said, you know, we had already become practically inseparable and were really close friends for about a year and a half when things took a romantic turn at the beginning of last summer. We promised each other that our friendship came first no matter what. but we wanted to see where our feelings would take us because it just felt so right, as cliche.
Yeah.
And so we both went into it knowing we had things we both needed to work on as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unfortunately, you know, there came a time where we just needed to take a step back and focus on our friendship. After that, we still remain the best of friends. We continue to spend the majority of our days together every week. If we weren't together, we were texting or on the phone. We pretty much talked practically every day, all day leading up to the night he went out to the forest where he disappeared.
Okay. Wow. That's super tough then. I mean, being on the outside, like, so you weren't there. I know I've talked to Tina and Parrish, and they, you know, have mentioned it on the podcast too, that you were the one who was, he was texting when he was telling you that he had a bad feeling about that night, kind of confiding in you that he, I don't know, something just felt off, it seemed like, to him.
Mm-hmm. And that was actually, you know, really hard looking back on that, because at the time, you know, I was trying to give him a little bit of space and I didn't want to pry.
Yeah.
So I remember telling him, I wish I knew more about who you were going to be with and where you're going. But I just, you know, I told him, I hope you're safe and I hope you have fun. And, you know, told him I loved him. And mm-hmm. That was that.
Yeah. And then was that the last time you had contact with him? Was that message that everybody's kind of heard of now? Is that...
That's the last. He ended up, I don't know if his phone died or he ran out of service, but the last messages I sent him, we both have iPhones, so they both went to green. So I don't even think he had received them, unfortunately.
Okay. Man. And, I mean, do you know any of the people who were there? I mean, you do now, I'm sure, because of all the stuff, everything that's happened. So now that you've seen that list and you kind of have gotten a good grasp on that crowd, did you know those people?
You know, I know roughly a handful of the individuals who were at the party, maybe not even. There is more that I know by name, but mm-hmm. didn't actually know personally. Mm-hmm. The few that I've actually really interacted with in the past are Ben, who is Michael and both of our good friends. Mm-hmm. And then I know the twins, Kalea and Kasaya, and I know Hunter.
Okay. Had you met Josie before?
I think I had met her, you know, at a...
In passing.
Like, in passing.
Yeah.
I didn't really know her.
Okay. Okay, so how did you find out, I guess? I mean, he leaves, he has a bad feeling, and then who's the next person to contact you about this?
So, roughly around 4:30 p.m. on August 5th, the same day he went missing, I received a message from our friend Jessie, mm-hmm. asking if I had seen Michael. She elaborated by explaining that she wasn't there, but had heard from someone, and this is a quote from her, actually. Mm-hmm. She said he went into psychosis, felt that no one wanted him there, and walked into the woods at 4 a.m. So right as I got that, I asked her if anyone had talked to Tina and Parrish. She said that Ben was supposedly talking to them, and then that's actually when I received a message from Ben right before I got in contact with Tina, who also asked me if I had heard from Michael in the past 12 hours.
Mm.
So I asked a few questions to just try to clarify some of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I reached out to Tina in hopes that she had heard from or seen Michael. And then if not, of course, to alert her that Michael was in fact missing.
Yeah, time to get up there.
Yeah,
and do something.
I was appalled that, though, so, yeah, you know, I don't know, it was kind of mind-blowing. I was appalled that I hadn't even heard about it, because obviously a lot of people were messaging me because they thought he might come here, because this was one of his safe havens.
Right.
He didn't come here to feel safe and...
Especially, you know, if he had a bad night.
Close. Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So did Jessie say, like, if she wasn't there, how did she find out?
You know, I can't remember for sure if I asked her who told her that. But she just said that her and other people were looking for him, and that's what she had heard from someone who was at the party.
Okay, so she got it firsthand, kind of, like somebody who was there. It wasn't like down the grapevine so far.
Yeah, it could have possibly been Hunter, because I know her and Hunter are pretty good friends, like, leading up to this.
Yeah.
And he was out there, so it might have been him, but I don't even know if I actually asked her who told her that. I was just like, okay, what do I do?
And then were you able to talk to anybody, like, that night? Did you text anybody who was there at the party and say, like, hey, do you know what's going on? Like, I'm getting these weird messages. Or you just went straight into go time, like, let's get the Brysons.
Yeah, the only person I really asked questions was Ben, because first of all, I trust him. I know he was already he contacted me, and he was getting in contact with fire and rescue, mm-hmm. or search and rescue, I mean. And so he's really the only one, especially because I didn't know
who right.
was out there. So at that point, my go time was talking to Tina and Parrish, making sure they knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. And then I got in contact with Michael's roommate, Sean, to ask if he knew anything.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, actually, my parents were on their way up to Eugene the same day that Michael went missing to come visit. So they arrived that evening. I was kind of waiting around for them. I called them, explained what was going on. And I talked to them. And although I really wanted to go out and search right away, because mm-hmm. I was kind of freaking out, we all agreed that it was probably best to wait until daylight. So I tried my best not to panic in hopes that he was just sleeping somewhere. Something just felt really wrong.
That's what Krista said, too. It was just like that gut feeling where it's like, no.
When we first went out to the forest, I think Krista said this too. Mm-hmm. I just had this feeling that he was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's his sister, and they're, obviously very connected on that level. But, mm-hmm. Michael and I have always said we're cosmically connected. And, yeah. He's always like, I don't know what the reason is, but we're connected, and that will never go away. And we've always been able to feel each other so strongly. And, I was hiking through those woods, and it didn't feel like he was there, but I wasn't going to, not exhaust every possibility.
Right. Or even let yourself really go there.
Everything I could think of, regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I felt this emptiness for a really long time, and it just feels like he is gone. And especially kind of been able to feel him spiritually in other ways, and that to me kind of makes that make sense even further, because he's been coming to me with an energy,
kind of confirms, so and also just gives you a little reassurance that he's still there though.
Okay,
so then when you did talk to Ben, was he at the point where he was super concerned now, or still kind of feeling like he might just be taking a nap somewhere?
I think he probably felt a mixture of both. I can't remember exact conversation. It was on the phone, and we were both pretty flustered, and he had been trying really hard to get search and rescue out there.
Yeah.
I think we were all in hopes that that was the case, that he was sleeping it off somewhere.
Right.
Whatever it may be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I've even heard a couple of these other stories from even the same group. They've lost people in the woods before. This isn't the first time somebody's been missing from this group, so I could see where panic doesn't set in right away, and it's just something that kind of snowballs after a while, and then it's like, oh crap, now it's really been 12 hours.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on?
I think that's why I initially panicked, is because it didn't feel like Michael. Yes, he could have been just passed out somewhere, but it just... That's a long time.
Yeah. Okay. So then the next day, you go out there with your parents?
Yeah. So the next day, August 6th, my parents drove me out. I was a pretty big mess, so I'm kind of glad they were here.
Yeah, me too.
Drove me out to base camp where the party had been. I got in the car with some friends, and we were driving around calling out for Michael. We stopped and looked down, cliffs and mm-hmm. overhangs, looking for any sign.
Mm-hmm.
I got a ride back to town that night because I didn't really bring supplies with me. Like I said, I think we were still really hopeful we were going to find
right.
him at that point. So, but then the following day, I went back out as soon as possible. I spent the whole day searching again. This time we actually started hiking trails around the area, not just driving around. And then I stayed up there that night because I just couldn't find it in me to leave in case he or some clue were to show up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was sleeping in my van, and every time I saw a car light drive past, I was up all night because I just kept thinking, oh, what if it's law enforcement or someone, coming with news? And
yeah.
It was really rough. But so then, after that, I spent the next day or two searching high and low, hiking up and down, and then that's basically when Parrish asked us, that being Michael's close friends, to organize the town searches that Anna explained.
Yes.
In the rabbit holes episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you guys did a great job. I mean, obviously, like we've said before, like there's no manual for this, but just the organization and like you guys putting your heads together, it sounds like you had like 10 to 15 people who were really like down to dedicate their lives to this until we could come up with something. So that's super fortunate.
We wanted Michael's face everywhere.
And it is, honestly, like, that's what's so crazy about this story. Like, you can't drive down a single road in this whole town and not see his face somewhere. Mm-hmm. He's everywhere. So you guys did a great job. Yeah, I hated hearing, like, all the false leads you guys were following. And, like, I actually had a chance to talk to Jesse briefly, and she said, like, you guys were even coming up with, like, maybe we should dress as homeless people, like yeah, these are elaborate.
Insanity. Like, I've never thought I don't even know how to get to explain, but we were putting ourselves in some crazy, risky, weird
seriously
situations.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, we did the posting flyers, you know, in different towns, and then that night was when we started getting potential sightings back in Eugene, so I immediately got in my car and I started, you know, driving around potential sighting areas as well as areas I know he enjoyed or might potentially go to.
Mm-hmm.
And then after dark, our friends and I split up and started searching downtown on foot. And then that night after midnight, I decided to post up with my friends Brittany and Joey at the skate park.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's known to be like a hot spot, a homeless hangout.
Yeah.
And then that was really the beginning of 4 or 5 days of staying up all night in Eugene. Oh, we all organized post-up spots where we would stake out all night or switch around every few hours. We figured, you know, if he really was in Eugene, it would be easier for him to come to where we were as opposed to like, all driving around.
No, it's actually like
the same place, you know?
Such a good idea.
I had multiple of my friends, you know, be like, hey, you know, maybe you should consider staying in your apartment for a few nights, because if he is here, he's going to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, if he's going to come to you, so, like, do you mind? Like,
yeah, not a bad idea.
Out here searching, like, do you mind, like, hanging out home? And so, like, I always had someone with me, like, our good friend Jeffrey stayed with me one of the nights, and we stayed up all night, kind of just hung out, and, you know, talked, and just hoped that he would show up. And when we went back out to the forest, or, like, I put a note on my door, and I, you know, wrote, you know, Michael, if you see this, like, I'm here tonight. And then, like, after that, I said, you know, because I didn't know if you had been here or not, so I said, if you've been here, I'm sorry, I've been out looking for you, but I'm here now, like, please come, or, you know, like, talk to me.
Yeah.
And then when we went back out to the forest, I, you know, I left my number, and I left Tina and Parrish's number, you know, in case he was in a state of mind where he didn't, like, know what to do or
right.
how to reach out. So
and
I,
he
like,
didn't have his phone. Yeah, that's
yeah,
a good idea.
Yeah, I posted them on my door, and I said, take this, post it. You know, I, like, taped them on there, but I made it so he could take them if he was around. I said, please, just, like, you know, let us know you're okay if you, you know, if you are. But
you did everything you could. Like, I hope that if I ever go missing, my friends are like you guys, because that's amazing. And I know your dad is a PI, and he ended up kind of taking on this case for Michael. And I spoke to him, and he was awesome, super professional. And I really feel like he just cares about Michael, which I think can be all the difference, you know, just having that personal connection. I really felt like he did an amazing job of collecting that information and then coming up in spouts. Like, I really respect him and what he did. So
yeah, it was really, you know, wonderful of him. At one point, I think it was probably into the second week, he just texted me and was like, I can't sit here and do nothing anymore. I'm coming up, and please let Tina and Parrish know if they're, you know, if they'd like me to, like, I'm willing to investigate this pro bono. Like,
yeah.
Not taking any money, but
yeah. Like, Parrish told me, like, he wouldn't even let them pay for his hotel. I was like, he is a good man. Okay, so Anna said that Tina and Parrish were kind of stressing that they needed help back in the forest. They went back out there. What were you, I mean, at the 2 week mark, like, what was it like for you? What were you kind of doing?
So, yeah, along with Anna and everyone else, we, you know, our leads in Eugene seem to be going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that it would be best to go back out to the forest to continue searching there, especially since the other volunteer numbers were kind of slowly growing smaller. So I was back up at the base camp and searching in the forest every day until the forest search was temporarily called off. After we left the forest, what I did was I continued to search in Eugene, replacing old flyers with current ones. We received a few tips that Michael had been spotted in Springfield. So I spent a few days in Springfield walking around bike paths, secluded river areas. I couldn't stop.
I know, I bet not.
It just felt like there was always something I could be doing and hoping just to meet someone or see something.
Never know.
And so after that, though, I started feeling a little lost and not knowing what to do. So I actually went back out to the forest to search. I looked up some of, there's a, you know, intuitive book. And so I actually followed some of the intuitive and psychic suggestions of areas to search, because why not? And time was just going on, so I figured, what the hurt? So actually, one of the times that my dad came up here, he went out there with me, and we searched under about like 8 or 9 bridges, and we started digging up rocks and earth that appeared to have been, you know, like areas that had been disturbed, looking for any sign, any clue. We still found nothing. That was actually one of the hardest days for me, because I just felt like I was digging and looking for the body of my best friend, you know. Very awful.
Man, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
So, I mean, after all this searching, so let's go back in the beginning. I'm sure you were as curious as everyone else. Did you talk to any of the other people that were there and try to get a story from them, any of the other campers, to see if anybody had anything?
Yeah, so when I first got out there on, Thursday morning, I actually talked to the twins. Or not, I don't know if I talked to both of them. I know I talked to Kasaya, and it immediately just, there was things that already didn't make sense, and there was things she was telling me that just knowing them, there's no way that's true.
Right.
And then also hearing from other people that were being more realistic and basically already falsifying what they had told me. So the first day I was out there, in the first hour, I was getting lied to my face. It was super disheartening. You know, these were people, and even though I only knew a few of them, they were people I thought I could trust. And so to have that just immediately be kind of taken away, and not feeling like I don't know anyone, if I could trust anyone that was out there and what they were telling me, it just felt like immediately that it was all up to the people that really did know and care for Michael.
I chatted with Jesse last night, and she was really helpful for me to kind of get an understanding of how some of these relationships, like the ins and outs, especially from the outside, right? Like, I don't know how any of these people are connected or what the dynamic is like. And she was kind of feeling like some of these people were being thrown under the bus that she didn't really feel like should be. One of the people that kept coming up was Kyle River.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know him?
I actually forgot to mention he is one of the ones I do know. Okay.
And Jesse kind of thought, like, Kyle's the guy who you would call if something did go wrong. Do you kind of feel like that's true? Like, that's how you feel as well?
You know, it's hard to say. I know Kyle fairly well, but not super well to where I feel like I could truly speak to that
form
of character. You know, when I went out there, he was gung-ho, and he was, you know, taking his forerunner and searching up and down, and, you know, it really did seem like he was trying to help, but I also started, you know, hearing that when people arrived, like, really early, or actually, I think it was even that night that Michael went missing on the 5th, that he was just sitting around the campfire, like not really giving a shit. To me, like, it took back everything that I had, like, first seen, and I was like, okay, what is really your intention here? Like, what's going on? Like, are you just acting like you're searching?
Because right. Are you just showing, like, saving face and hanging around?
Or, you know, whatever.
Well, even, like, Ben, like, at the beginning, when I'm just hearing the story for the first time, like, you're this guy, you're Michael's only real, real, real friend there, and, like, you also sleep for 12 hours that night? What is the deal with all these people sleeping for 12 hours? And then he's like, actually, I was up for 48 hours and was more like going face down, can't wait, can't stay awake another minute. And I'm like, okay, I can understand that.
Totally. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I can speak to that firsthand. Like, after 2 days.
That's a lot.
He pretty much hit a wall.
But why didn't Michael?
I think they drugged him.
With acid?
Well, you know what? I originally thought, I know Michael so well, and he has just started experimenting with psychedelics again. Mm-hmm. He took a, like, 3 years long break because he had his two first acid trip, like, after his second acid trip, he had a really bad experience, and mm-hmm. he was traumatized.
Yeah.
So he barely just started dabbling again. And my thing is he's a party machine, but he was always still having a good time. And, you know, he always had people, you know, were going to take care of him, but he still always had a smile on his face.
So you don't feel like he could have been a fighter? Like, he would have gotten really, like, messed up and then picked a fight with somebody?
The reason I think that would have happened, and that's why I got to that conclusion, was psychedelics.
Okay.
Because I think that if, even if he, you know, maybe wanted a dose and he wanted a little bit, they don't care about what is a little bit to him. So it was either on accident and they really didn't care, or it was on purpose and they just dosed him. And that's what I originally thought. And then we started hearing that one of the twins woke him. Like, Michael originally tried to go to bed when mm-hmm. Ben went to bed.
Right.
Someone woke him up by putting Molly in his mouth. Like, hey, come party with us. And Michael likes to party. Like, it's one of those things where they want to share, but no, I don't have a single friend that would, while I'm sleeping, be like, hey, I need you to party with me. But yeah, it only makes sense that the few people that say they were the last to see him and have this word-for-word story would make this word-for-word story because they know something. But part of it, there's a lot of those people are so spun and kind of gone from doing so many different types of drugs and just kind of losing their sense of reality.
In this situation, it's so tormenting to me that, like, there's this divide and there's this uncertainty, and it's difficult to, like, begin to move on from this tragedy because there's just a giant question mark. So,
yeah, and now, yeah, a lot of us, you know, we're kind of grieving in our own ways, but it's hard to really begin to grieve when you don't know exactly what you're grieving for.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think most of us are in belief that he's no longer with us, but we, you know, we still can't be sure. And so that's what's really, really difficult about this, is
because
we want to have that closure. We all do. And it's really important to be able to move forward. And yeah, so we all are kind of stuck. And I know that Michael doesn't want us to be. So all we can do is really hope for answers sooner than later, and, you know, but we'll never, ever give up on him.
Yeah. And I think that that's, like, really been the main thing that I've gained from talking to, like, all his friends and family. It's like, he has this amazing support group, and, like, this circle of people that love him are relentless, and their love for him is so deep that it's pushing them forward. Even in, like, I just can't imagine being on day, close to 80 days now. And I just see this drive to just keep moving forward from his parents, from his sister, from you guys. And it's really inspiring. And I think it's really just kind of a testament to Michael, too. Like, look at this crowd that he was able to draw in with his, like, soul. Like, he just attracts this type of person. And it's amazing. Okay, so I know it is speculation. We don't know at this point what happened. But if you had to guess, what do you think happened to Michael?
So I have many theories. Well, I used to have a lot more. I've got a few now. Mm-hmm. I think Michael got mixed up with some bad people, mm-hmm. and something awful happened to him out there in the simplest of terms. But knowing what I know now, I, you know, obviously can't say for sure. I think it's it's a likely possibility that someone puddled him, either inebriated him for the purpose of foul play, or they puddled him and an accident happened and it was covered up.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to Michael was evil and malicious or an accident, I'm not sure what to believe in that regard. But either way, I genuinely believe something went down out there that shouldn't have. And I truly believe that at least a few people know what happened to Michael.
I wasn't present for any of these events, so it's difficult for me to comment on what I do and do not believe to be true in this story. I want to be clear that just because somebody said something on the podcast does not mean that it's a fact. I can't really claim to have any 100% true facts on this case, since I wasn't there the night of his disappearance, and I'm relying on other people's accounts of what happened to piece this together. What I can do is offer people a way to clarify information anonymously if it's needed. So here's what I want to do. If you hear something on the podcast that you know is untrue, please contact me. I don't want to be spreading misinformation, and the only checks and balances I have are from other people who were at certain events or know somebody who was. So please email me at nowheretobefound2020@gmail.com, or you can contact me through the Nowhere to Be Found Facebook page and let me know that you have information regarding something that was said on the podcast. It can be 100% anonymous, but that is really the only fact-checking tool I have, so please don't hesitate to reach out. We're getting to a strange place in this case where we're kind of in a stalemate. I feel like I've reached out to everyone I can who may have information, so now I'm enlisting your help. If you or anyone you know has pertinent information on this case, please reach out to me and let me know. And if you know somebody who's on the fence about coming forward, please encourage them to come forward and let them know that it can all be anonymous. And I want to put it out there again to anyone who was at Josie's birthday party. Please contact me if you're willing to do an interview and get your side of events out there. I've tried to reach out to many of the people from the list, and I haven't heard back from most. I understand the hesitation, but I think it's easier to villainize people who aren't coming forward. I hope that if things are being said that are untrue, the victims of the slander will come forward to defend themselves and shine light on the truth. We've been asked how our listeners can contribute to the show, so we set up an account with Patreon. Check out the link in our show notes if you're interested in supporting our cause. You can also find it on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com.